Hey, welcome to Table Talk. This is John Jones. I'm at John Solo on Twitter and a longtime role player. And I'm joined by Will Blackstock.
Hi, I'm Will. I'm at Dark Wedge on Twitter, and I run a role-playing group where people do lots of different role-playing games, and I really like role-playing games and board games, which is why I'm here.
And Grant S. Howitt, I guess it's S.
Hello there. Yeah, legally my name is Grant S. Howitt. I go by G.S. Howitt on Twitter, but generally people call me Grant. I'm a role-playing game designer and suppose a games journalist and a writer, and I very much like taking apart games and looking at the mechanics and what makes them tick.
So tonight, thanks guys, by the way, thanks for joining me. We're going to talk
this morning.
About
you mean
today? Yes, this morning. I'm sure when it is.
We should note. We should note for our listeners that we're doing this across three time zones. So we have myself at 7, quarter past 7 in the morning in sunny Sydney. Will's giving up his Friday night.
It's
in London, and John is just having an easy cup
somewhere
of tea
else
on the afternoon.
Yeah.
No, John has driven 9 hours to be with you today, so you should really appreciate it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've got my feet up. I'm just having a sangria, you know. It's a nice life here in Sacramento. I'm not even sure where I am now.
So you just kept driving. That was the problem.
Will, this was your topic of conversation, I think. Suggestion again was... that didn't make any sense, did it?
I've been thinking a little bit about drama in games, how to add drama to games, you know, because I guess I should explain a little bit what I mean when I say drama. I guess I mean tension, I mean sort of excitement, I mean, you know, just the stuff in the games that makes you sort of excited in a dramatic kind of a way. I don't mean sort of necessarily drama in the sense of theatre, although that could be parts of it if you want.
A thrill, perhaps.
Yeah.
So, for you, what sort of games are powering this sort of feeling?
Well, it was slightly inspired by a game I played of the Battlestar Galactica board game, and I think possibly some of our listeners will be familiar with it. It's a game where the central mechanic essentially is that one of you is secretly a traitor that will destroy everybody else, or they're trying to. And at one point, they reveal themselves in the game. And a dramatic moment for me in that game, I mean, actually, it's full of moments of drama, I have to say. They try and sort of emulate the show. It's based on the rebooted Battlestar Galactica show from 2004. And it does a really good job of that, actually. It's a really nice game that, you know, encapsulates the feeling of a show really well. Mostly because everyone is accusing each other of being traitors. So
that's dramatic.
It is dramatic, yeah. And, you know, that people get a little bit sort of in character, people get entrenched in their views and everything. But in my very, very first game, we played right the way to the end, and it came down to a 50-50 dice roll as to who would win, which side would win. And that was dramatic, that dice roll, believe me, you know. And the fact that, you know, the Cylon players had pushed the human players to that point where, you know, they really did have no choice but to go for this 50-50 dice roll, and otherwise they were fairly certain it was all going to go wrong. That was good, you know, for their thing, and they deserved to win. I say that being the Cylon who won, you know.
it's interesting how, like, if you boil stuff down to a dice roll, like how dramatic a single dice roll can be. I remember I ran a game of Dungeons and Dragons a long time ago, and the final session of the game, I think we had 3 dice rolls because we'd gotten to the point where the rules for 4th edition Dungeons and Dragons just couldn't tell the stories I wanted to tell with them anymore. So we were largely ignoring them, and we had this fight between two characters going on for about a year and a half. An NPC and a PC, and they turned up, and they finally had this big standoff. I said to the player, "You roll the D10, and I'll roll the D10, and then we'll see who rolls highest, and that's who dies. And that's who lives, rather than that's who dies. And then I rolled a 9, and he rolled a 10. And retelling it, you feel
exciting.
Like Rimmer, Red Dwarf. There's that scene in Red Dwarf where Rimmer's like, "Well, he rolled a 4, but then I rolled 2 5, and that is how you feel retelling it. But at the time, it was super exciting because it was, what is he going to roll a 10? And to you can write as much as many clever ways of enforcing drama or creating drama in a group as possible. And I'm going to waffle on about some of them later. But at the root of it, you need connection to characters, and that's, or you need connection to your element in the, to your stake in the game.
I agree. You absolutely have to care about that kind of thing. Like you say, a 50-50 dice roll at the beginning of the game means nothing. A 50-50 dice roll at the very end, and you know, the whole of it hinges on what happens then. That's really exciting.
And if that doesn't feel arbitrary as well, if the game's been written as such.
Yes,
so
that's true. So you don't want the whole game to feel like a 50-50 dice roll that you should have just tossed a coin at the beginning and, you know, given up.
Which is how a lot of people recommend you play Warhammer 40k these days. You just paint your army and toss a coin at the top, and then pretty much.
Right. I thought you're supposed to be able to like judge the distances to things, you know, and go, oh, that's a distance of at least 40 inches, for example.
I once played a game of Battlefleet Gothic, which is the ship based combat game they released for Warhammer 40k, and I was commanding the side of our. I think it was like 2 8-man sides against each other, and I managed to command, despite having never played Battlefleet Gothic before. And the opening turn, I guessed the range from my back artillery ship. I was like, no, it's definitely 46 centimeters. Are you sure, Grant? Yeah, I'm super sure. It's 46 centimeters. And landed my entire barrage in the unshielded rear of my own capital ship and lost us the game.
Oh, dear.
Like, I didn't even stick around. I just, well, my work here is done, and walked away.
you were the Cylon in Battlefleet Gothic, weren't you? You betrayed them good.
Well, I didn't want to. I felt really embarrassed about it because I think it was the third time I'd been to the roleplay to the wargaming group. So I turned up and lost them the game. But yeah. Anyway, yes.
It was a dramatic failure. Oh, no.
It was certain. I've certainly remembered it. Yeah.
So it can be dramatic when things go horribly wrong as well. I think that's fair.
Certainly.
And are they going to go wrong? Are they going to go right? Is the core of that the risk of performing the action and the reward you'd get for doing it, which is what pushes you in. And the two things you need from a game to generate drama is a risk and reward mechanic, and that could just be: am I going to win? Am I going to lose? Is this an interesting enough or a monumentous enough thing I'm doing, and then a mechanical connection to the universe or to the game you're playing. Because like poker's very dramatic. Poker's an incredibly dramatic game. But it doesn't have any elements of fantasy.
Otherwise, you know,
I mean, I'll be honest with you, I've never really gotten through to watching an episode of poker on TV because people just. I don't know.
It's quite dramatic because I think you know a lot of things that the players don't know, and you can see people, you know, lining themselves up for a tremendous fall. If it were on TV or something, you call it dramatic irony. You know, the irony that they don't know what they're doing, but you, the audience, do.
It's quite highly skilled too, isn't it? I mean, you can appreciate someone who's very good at, you know, wrangling the other players and just, you know. Concealing tells and all that stuff.
Poker is an incredible game and one I have the greatest respect for, but I do not play it because it actually freaks me out. Like, it's too dramatic. I'll sit down opposite a friend and I'll say, listen, for the next half an hour, I'm going to lie to you over and over and over until I've taken all your money. And that's a really strange thing to do with your friends. I can't quite enjoy that. So I don't play so much, but I do entirely appreciate what a great game it is and how it's so entertaining to watch someone be good at it.
Absolutely. If you've never heard of poker, there'll be a link to it in the show notes. So. Anyway, sorry. So Will, you had in the sort of pre-show, you mentioned some other games which I've promptly forgotten about.
I also wanted to talk about the Game of Thrones board game, which is another game I enjoy, and I think that is a very dramatic game for several reasons. One is the balance is quite good. You when you fight with each other, you each secretly choose a card from your thing, and they have different values on them. And the hook there is that you can only use each of them once. So you have one really good guy, you know, he's really powerful, but a bunch of you are less good. And essentially, like, there's some kind of drama, I'd say, in trying to work out what the other person has done, because if you have more troops than they do, the incentive is for you to use a less powerful card. And that means, well, hang on, if they use their most powerful card and I use sort of something that's sort of slightly less powerful, I might actually lose this.
Yeah.
But I also want to, you know, make this other move over here, which I really need the most powerful guy for. So I need to kind of, there's an element of bluffing, yeah, like in poker, like in some things, that you need to kind of use in order to work out what the best strategy to do is and what the best thing to pick is. And in that game as well, at the beginning of each turn, you reveal cards which sort of dictate things that happen before you do any of your moves or any of anything else as well, which again creates drama, because there are things that can come up there which will ruin any sort of plan you've made before that point. You know, you've seen how the last turn ended and you've kind of gone, gosh, okay, well, you know, I'm if I capture this place and this place, I actually win the game, you know, and you win instantly, and that would be great. So I just need to work out, you know, how can I get that and how can I get that? And then, you know, suddenly everyone gets more armies or something and that plan is completely out of the window. And you go, oh, honestly. Yeah.
It's there's something about it which reminds me of stealth mechanics, which are a problem in role-playing games, I think. Like, there's a new game coming out called Dark, which is doing some interesting things with them. But stealth mechanics in games are generally a problem, in that if one person's bad at stealth, the entire party's bad at stealth, because you can always hear the guy in plate mail. By the way, I found a really lovely solution to the perennial problem with the paladin breaking stealth, which is you cast levitate on him and tie a rope around him.
Ah.
And just pull him down in the corridor like a paladin balloon.
Perfect.
But that atmosphere of, am I going to be found out? And if they do this, they'll find me. Rather than, I'm powerful, I'm in a fight, I'm evenly matched. The idea that if people find out what you're doing, you're screwed. That's a very dramatic thing. And like, poker shares that with Game of Thrones, which shares that with, in a role-playing game, trying
because
to sneak
into a fight. Because the consequences are so dire, or they could be, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's this risk-reward thing, isn't it? You know, I wanted to ask about making role-playing games more dramatic and what people thought were the best ways to do that.
Well, it's tricky because a lot of what we can say at this point comes down to tell a good story. And what I'm more interested in is finding games, because not anyone can tell a good story, but you don't need a game to tell a good story. And a good game makes stories happen. It pushes people into certain modes of behavior, which means that there will be dramatic revelations if you want them. Mm. So something like Fate, which is an excellent game, it's published by Evil Hat, and it's free at the moment. It's pay what you want, so it's free if you don't mind them guilting you. But the principle behind Fate is that you are a competent person in a dangerous situation. And you care about what you're doing. And that's the core premise. And then past that, everything else is just setting and layers on top of that. But it has a mechanic in it called fate points. And the way fate points work, you spend them when you want to trigger an aspect. So you want to say, this part of the scene is important to me. This part of my character is important. And you earn them by having the GM, using those same traits, give you bad things. So say if you've got the... if you've got the trait Tenacious Bloodhound and you're a bounty hunter, then you can spend fate points to chase someone down, and that's super cool. But if the GM wants to keep you out of a scene or cause problems for you later on, he can then say, there's a bounty which you missed many years ago, and you see the guy, you hear the guy's in town. Do you want to go and pursue him, even though it's going to slow down your current investigation? And he just sort of slides a fate chip across the table, and you can choose to take that on. And that drama, that you basically have a little button which says, this is dramatically important now, this is going to have some ramifications in the story.
Yeah.
And that's super useful. However, there are little things you can do. There are ways you can make games more dramatic. And I believe we were talking about music before.
In role-playing games, yeah.
Yeah. Or board games, actually. Like, this, you can certainly put on, like,
that's true, yeah,
Galactica theme tune when, well, just the album, not just the theme tune on loop when you're playing the game. And that can evoke a setting and a mood.
Does that make it dramatic? I mean, if it's just randomly, I mean.
If it fits what you're trying to do, yeah, then sure.
That's the issue with role-playing game music that I've always had. And if either of you managed to make it work, John, I remember you used music in your game of Rogue Trader. What was the process of doing that?
If I had enough time to prep and I was thinking about the scenes, you know, the vignettes that I wanted to happen, and sometimes, a lot of times, while I was, you know, dreaming up things, I'd be listening to music, and that would kind of inspire, you know, certain things, and so I would try to use those pieces of, you know, but sometimes it does come down to luck, like, you know, if you don't have the time to do it. Actually, it kind of it worked pretty well in our sort of multiverse game that we played recently, where we kind of had a co-GM thing going on, which, you know, I'd never really done successfully before, but I had such good synergy with the co-GM Jonas. And he was running a few sessions, and so I, even though I was kind of being a player, I was also being able to focus on the music.
I was still, sort of a DJ.
Yeah, exactly. I was basically
kind of a cool
he did say
have,
that.
Yeah. It worked very well. I can say.
Thank you.
As a player, it was really good.
It did seem to, because I was able to actually focus on and do that. It's still tricky, you know, to come up with the right pieces and have the right, you know, motifs, you know, notes playing in the background when dramatically appropriate things are happening. So,
I certainly found that problem with Dark Heresy. One of the first games I ran coming out of university was a long running game of Dark Heresy, and it gathered so much moss, this game, that I decided eventually I put on this playlist. And it's a playlist of some excellent artists, X-ray Dog. And like Two Steps from Hell, I believe they're called as well. And they do the dramatic music you hear in film trailers.
Okay.
Which you think is great for a game. Oh yeah, certainly. So it's short, incidental, instrumental music that'll be really, really good. And so you put in the playlist, and then all the way throughout a fight, it's just it's like mournful choral music. And then suddenly the players are getting ready to organise their biscuit cupboard. And it never fails.
So it's fit for the trailer, but not for anything else.
Because like music certainly puts on its own mood, and if you can't, if it's an intense piece of music, then you really run the risk of exhausting your players and making them feel silly.
Well, my most successful bit of using music was, I've mentioned Battlestar Galactica before. I was running a game, a horror game essentially, and the players sort of were speaking to this character, and they weren't entirely certain if she was real or she was sort of hallucination or something like that. And I used a piece of music from Battlestar Galactica where one of the characters sees, you know, this hallucination of a woman talking to him, and I knew that they would associate that with because they would have seen Battlestar and they would have known, you know, this kind of thing, and it fit very well with everything, really. So they brought their baggage from Battlestar Galactica into my game. So I never went out and said, like, this is may or may not be a hallucination. I just said, you know, she's there, she seems normal. And also, like, none of you hear this music, but I'm just playing it in the background. Like, your characters don't hear it, but you're definitely hearing it, you know. Worked quite well. I don't know if it was dramatic, necessarily.
There used to be a power in Big Eyes, Small Mouth, which was hear theme music.
Right.
So you'd have things like, you're a wizard, you can fly, you're a cat girl. Or for 7 points, you can hear the theme music. And so at any point, you can ask the GM, what's the current theme music?
Right.
And from that, you can intuit whether or not to trust this guy. Which is a lovely idea. I'm just looking up something now as well. There's a company called... They do this thing called RPG Background Loops. And the publisher is Plate Mail Games. Wes Otis is a chap, he's a professional sound designer, and he produces these MP3 files. He sells them for $1.50 through RPG Now. And each one of these files is 10 minutes long on a perfect loop. Mm-hmm. So it's possible to and like I think he's got about 40 of them. So I've found that it's a really good one called Inside a Dead God, which sounds a little bit like you've woken up inside some sort of dead god. But they've got things like urban city streets and like a rainy forest or a spooky graveyard. And it doesn't have the beats of music. It doesn't have the, like, your players aren't guessing what the next note's going to be. It's just ambient noise.
Right. Yeah,
and
sure.
it's specifically designed, unlike a lot of ambient music, because I imagine Will certainly be aware of the genre known as ambient music, where it's just someone walking blindly into a piano for a while. it's the musical equivalent of listening to an air vent slowly ticking over. But occasionally, because it's for the goth market, there'll be someone just right in the background, and then it'll fade out. But that was enough to distract all your players from that, and it's awkward. But these background loops, and maybe John, who knows, maybe in post production you could mix into a short clip of one. Now, I can send you a link to the one I was just talking about.
Okay, yeah, please.
I used one in the game last week, and I found it was really good just to have effectively horrible, creepy noises playing while we played the game. I could put that on loop, and I didn't have to worry about anything else that would happen. It added to the atmosphere. It certainly made it more dramatic as the players. They killed the king in yellow, ran him through with a sword.
Wow.
Can you do that? Is that?
Well.
First off, it wasn't a Cthulhu game. And I'm not very original when it comes to ideas, so I just cribbed a load of Carcosa stuff and slipped it seamlessly into 13th Age game. And none of my players have read The King in Yellow. I was upfront about it and said, I've taken a lot of inspiration and a lot of things directly from this thing called The King in Yellow, and about Carcosa, etc., etc. And they were all fine with that. They're just having fun telling a story. And you know, sometimes it's nice to go to Carcosa and then beat up night gaunts by smashing them off walls and then go run through the King of Yellow with a big sword.
Right.
It's nice to let loose, because normally, listeners, when you go to Carcosa, you go mad and die. So yeah, it's nice to get out, which is not the perfect holiday, normally.
I mean,
certainly not. It's rare to find the holiday maker who'll enjoy that.
Yeah, it's not an empowerment fantasy. So. Sorry,
before we move entirely off the subject of music and things like that, I came across a website the other day which does a lot of ambient music for role-playing games, specifically for role-playing games. It's all original stuff, and it's called tabletopaudio.com. Mm.
Yeah, I had a look at that recently. Yeah.
I haven't listened to all of it, but you know, there's definitely a few bits and pieces in there that I would consider using. And they all have, you know, different moods and some nice little pictures to sort of offer you a suggestion on what it might be in case you're unsure what Starship Bridge might involve, you know.
Just or long ragtime jazz.
Yes.
What we really need, though, is a soundboard or something. I mean, I'm surprised. I know there were some companies that were developing, like, iPad apps, but I can't think of any right now. But
it's one called Horrorly.
Horrorly?
Yeah, horror.ly.
Okay.
Which gives you a soundboard, and it has creepy ambience and giggling child and distant raven squawking. And it's all done through icons. So you've got a picture of a raven, or a picture of two little girls holding hands, or a picture of a graveyard, a picture of a swirling vortex. And you just cue them in and out as you want, and it fades them up and down automatically. But you can run that off an iPad, which is quite useful.
Oh, that's great. I was thinking, like, something that had little, you know, stings, and, you know, you just tap it to get a little quick violin, you know, trilling or something. I don't know.
Right. I guess it's difficult, especially for my games mastering style. I found especially if I'm games mastering with people I don't know, I'll stand up for the entire game, and I'll walk around the table, and I'll try and grab people, and I'll try and physically get. I'll try and use the physicality to make a more exciting game. And I'm quite high energy. I mean, you've both been in my games, I think, and what my games generally characterized by is 3 hours of excitement, and then me realizing I've run out of ideas, and that's fine, that's my style. But at that point, I guess because I'm always on, I'm always trying to engage as many players as possible. It's really difficult to take a step back, even for a minute, Hey, hang on a sec, guys. I'm just going to get this violin sting queued up for the next dramatic revelation.
Right, yes.
Which I couldn't do without saying something stupid like that.
And well, that's the thing. The GM going, hang on a minute, I just need just a few minutes to kind of sort this out. It's not dramatic, and it sucks the drama out of the scene in some ways. So it's probably better if, you know, if you find it easier not to have to worry about doing the sound and things like that, just to focus on telling the story yourself and, you know.
I think John's idea of having John's role of having a DJ is actually quite valuable. And having someone who responds, who understands the music that the people like, and responds to the elements going on. So if somebody's getting more dramatic, they'll swap into something more dramatic, and the GM having a veto over it. So if they start putting on, you know, hey Mickey, you're so fine. They can say, hey, please, that's not appropriate, and change off it. Sometimes it would be. You know, I've been in games where it is appropriate, but often it's not. And to have the ability for someone to create ambience in the room would be really good. We started doing that after my players got tired of believing they were inside a dead god and started to get a little bit freaked out by all the horrible noises. I think one of them put on the soundtrack from Big Trouble in Little China, which wasn't really apt.
Not
to
quite.
Be honest. No, it was quite synthy.
All right.
But it was dramatic, and I was like, well, have you got other things? You're like, and so like between us, we worked out something that was good, and then the players were in charge of that, and that was that was effective actually. I think that's a good piece of a good handy hint, a useful tip, a top tip for our listener.
Top tip from Grant.
A table talk top tip.
Oh, table talk top tip. Yeah, that works. The more you know. Yeah.
And the last game I wanted to talk about, I've got in my notes, that I feel is dramatic, is The Resistance. A game for people who don't know, this is a game where some of you are secretly trying to betray the people. Some of you are members of The Resistance, you're the good guys. And every round, a number of you are sort of chosen to go on a mission by someone who is the leader. Everybody who is trying to betray everyone else, there are a few of you, but you know who you are. It's a bit like Mafia or Werewolf or sort of a game like that in some ways. And so that can be quite dramatic, I think, because if, as the evil betrayers types, you know, someone is going on this mission, and if you just keep your mouth shut, right, everybody will vote the right way, because it seems like the table is going, there's a tension there, you know. What do you do? How do you act? All that kind of thing. So games where there is information that is hidden from some players is could be very dramatic.
As a brief aside, I've always respected Resistance more than Mafia since they released Resistance, because if you get found out as a traitor in Resistance, you get to keep playing.
Yeah.
There's no.
You can't be found out in the same sense that you can in some other games. And there's no person in charge of everything, which is good. Everybody gets to play.
And no one's eliminating you as well. And it's,
there's no player elimination. That's great.
Because of that, I mean, to have a good game of Mafia, you need about 10 people, I think, to get enough confusion for the Mafia to work properly, or for them to start killing people without realizing what's going on. Otherwise, if you've got six people and two of them are Mafia, it's not too hard to intuit who's doing what. And then if you've got a 10-player game, then you're looking for the if someone gets taken out on the first round, gets voted out and lynched or killed by the Mafia, then you've got about half an hour where they just can't do anything. They're not even allowed to talk.
And that's really not dramatic.
They have to go somewhere else.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. And there is a drama inherent in watching that, and I think that's something which we should maybe discuss. Which is, can you get things which are dramatic to watch and listen to? And being getting killed in a game of Mafia, and then watching it play out, and not being able to say anything, but seeing that the Mafia are these guys, and they're angling to do this, and you know who the Mafia are, and you know that they're maneuvering around to kill this guy. That's quite exciting to watch, but not as exciting as, you know, playing the game.
Yeah.
Which is why I prefer Resistance.
I mean, obviously things can be dramatic without you being directly involved. Obviously we have films, TV, you know, and things like that. But I don't know. I don't know if there are lots of games out there that I would say are dramatic to watch if you're not playing. We mentioned poker earlier. I suppose that can be quite good as long as you know what's going on.
Can't it? If you're watching someone else play a game, if you're invested in what's happening, then yeah, I think it can still be affecting. I have a question, though. What would you say that a complex set of circumstances can kind of infuse drama? So, like, basically, the characters, taking sort of like a BioWare type of game as an example, where you've got lots of shades of grey and lots of opposing sort of conflicting goals happening, sometimes within the same character. A character who, really hates this other race or species, but he has to help them in order to save his crew or something like that. Mm-hmm. These sort of very three-dimensional, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. Very complex, situations.
I think that meaningful communication of those to the player is more important than the dramatically grey rather than black and white nature of them. Because I've played through most of the Mass Effect games, and I couldn't tell you what happened at any of them. I like shooting the man. Like the men would come up, the bad men, and then I'd shoot them, and they go away. And then occasionally,
sometimes change shapes and sizes?
They did. Different men's would arrive.
Okay, and then, different men. But they were all there to be killed. Yeah.
And then a big man would arrive, and I'd push a button, and I would teleport across the arena, and then magically headbutt him to death. And that was my favourite part of Mass Effect, when you got effectively you became a steam train, very briefly, with the I think it was the Surge biotech power, which made you teleport, and you ended the teleport in a headbutt, and that was very exciting. But for me, Mass Effect didn't have that drama inherent in it, because I wasn't sure. I didn't feel that my choices were informed. I didn't feel like I understood if I betray this alien race and reward this alien race, how does that affect me? And I guess if I'd been paying attention and cared all the way through, I'd have been interacting with these races for three games and learning about blah, blah, blah. But I guess there's the storytelling method in Mass Effect, which is to quite ham-handedly give you an intro to the world. And then give you the entire thing as an encyclopedia you can read at your leisure. It's lazy storytelling in that respect, because I want you to show me rather than tell me about what's going on. And if I'm just being told the Gethra race made 3,000 years ago, but if I want to learn about the Geth rather than being taught about it through the game, what they've got is an encyclopedia to fall back on. I think it's gonna lead to some lazy writing. I'm sort of stomping all over your example. I don't mean to do that.
I think that's a fair criticism, but I get the sense that the encyclopedia and that kind of stuff are in games, because you can't always sit down and play a 20 or 40 hour game all the way through. And so especially if you've got, if you're older and you've got kids and you work and other things, you don't have the time to really get invested in it. And so it's there for you to sort of reacquaint yourself. It's like, oh, I put that game down for 6 months, which is what often happens to me, It's like I'll look at this last save and it'll be like more than a year ago, and I'll go, oh, my God, it's been a while since I played this.
Previously on Mass Effect.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so it's to help you get reacquainted with the world, which is a pretty diverse, fairly diverse world. For me, what was dramatic was there were situations where, you had someone in your party who you wanted to sort of please or, make happy, and you oftentimes had to do things that went against, their beliefs or, something they told you. And so for me, it was a lot of the dialogue things. And granted, it was very binary, there wasn't a lot of, a lot of shades of grey, but it felt like it had the illusion of complexity. And
I don't think it was illusory. I think they put a lot of work into that game. And as you were saying about interacting with your crew members, the, very much the core of drama is what a character wants now, what a character wants to happen in the future, and what, and whether or not they can have both of those things and how they come to terms with those things. You have drama evolving out of that. Like in Die Hard, John McClane wants to get together with his wife again, but at the moment terrorists are stopping that. And from that, you get quite a dramatic film. Die Hard is one of the best films ever made, and a perfect example of the hero's journey as well. Really beautiful example of that.
But my point is, if they weren't already estranged, because they kind of established that they're kind of separated, and they're, I mean, the film doesn't really need that extra dimension of, you know, of John McClane and Holly Gennaro sort of reconciling, you know.
I'd argue that's what the film's about, but I'd also argue that this is us getting way off track in a Tabletop Gamers podcast.
Yeah.
Well, I think Die Hard is apropos. I don't know.
But... Have they made a tabletop game of it?
No, because I think... Well, actually, you could, couldn't you? I mean, you could have a Nakatomi Plaza.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, clear out floor by floor.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not.
I know what you mean about those nice BioWare games. So the most dramatic moment for me in one of those games was in Dragon Age, when the Dragon Age Origins, the first one, when near the end of the game, there's a character, and you've been friends with this other character, Alistair, pretty much from the beginning. And he's quite a likable character. He's a bit sarcastic about things. You know, he's fun. He seems like a nice person. But he doesn't want to forgive this other character. And I got a bit into, you know, sort of role-playing a particular sort of character. And we've basically been giving everyone second chances throughout to that point. And it came down to, you know, my character sort of having this moral problem here. You know, Alistair was his friend, and he didn't particularly like this other guy. But it was a question of, you know, this is how we treat people. We give them a second chance. And, you know... In the end, it was a choice between the two of them.
Oh, no.
And I sort of hoped that there would be some way of convincing him, you know, to come and see things from my point of view. I say my character's point of view, you know. Yeah. That's how invested I got in it, you know. I was like, no, we're doing this, you know. And I was genuinely upset in the game. I was like, well, what, you know, we're friends. Why can't you just, like, we're doing this way. Why can't we be friends and do it this way and as well? But I couldn't have both of the things.
It's got that risk. It's got that risk and reward. It's got the risk that you're going to lose one of your friends forever, and it's got the connection to the fiction. It's got the connection to your investment in the game. Like in a game of poker, you're testing your skill against each other. But in this, you've invested a lot of time and energy in role playing and emotion in behaving in a certain way, and he's reacted in a convincing way, which lets you suspend your disbelief for a while and pretend that this isn't just a series of button pushes. This is a story that which you're invested in. Sorry, rather than pretending, you can see that it's more than just a series of button pushes. Once you wrap the story around it, and that's the essence of drama.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I've run out of things to say.
I think that's actually quite a nice place to end it, you know.
Yeah.
Perfect.
The essence of, that's is the essence of drama.
Yeah, I think to boil it down, it's about getting people invested in what's, you know, happening. And I don't know why I'm trying to say it better than you said it.
Well, but before we leave, on the subject of Table Talk top tips, I think we should all give a useful piece of advice for putting more drama in your games.
Ah. Okay.
I'm going to regurgitate something from my blog. So.
Oh, perfect.
Oh, yes. No, I can guess what this might be, but feel free.
Yeah. Okay. I'll go first. My table talk top tip for putting more investment for getting your players to have a more dramatic game is to get them to create factions. And if you go to my blog and look, and if you search "look robot factions," you'll get a much better explanation of what this is. But the core idea is when they start play, rather than just making their character, they also make one organization which likes them and one organization which doesn't like them. And they can go into as much detail as they want, although I'm very much of the opinion people should go into as little detail as possible at all times. But if rather than having I am a pirate and then you have you add dice to your rolls when you do pirate things. If you have, I'm a pirate and I used to sail with the crew of the Drunken Skag, and the Drunken Skag loved me very much, but I don't sail with them for some reason. But also I was pursued by the Royal Navy, and the captain Hardcastle would always come and chase me in his ship. And at that point you've established two things about the world, and if the GM wants to put in a pirate ship, he's got a ready-made pirate ship, and he's got a ready-made antagonist in that scene. Or he just has these things to, or she has these things to work with, and that lets you that investment in the world, like giving a little bit of creative control over to your players and letting them make something which they feel is their creation, and showing that off to other players can work wonders.
Yeah, I think mine would be the other side of that, which is, you know, if you're a GM and you're trying to come up with stories to tell, basically listen to what your players have created. If they're giving you loads of backstory, or if they're just inventing things, use those things. You know,
yeah.
Don't forget that the players are telling you what they want their stories to be about. And so, you know, be mindful of what they've already given you to work with. And if you work within that framework, then I think you'll already have buy-in from the players, which is what we're talking about. So, Will, was that enough time to think of?
I thought of something reasonable. Yeah. No, I just wanted to, I agree with you, John. I think that's right. What was I going to say? I was going to say, I think a good way of doing it is, if you have a character, and possibly an NPC, I guess, have them act against type from time to time. I think that can be quite dramatic. You know, when suddenly, if the guy who's always been like, you know, I care so much about this thing, I care about this thing, if he changes his mind for some reason, that's quite a, you know, it could be quite a dramatic moment.
Obviously, he has to have a reason for doing that.
Yes, and it needs to be a sensible reason.
I don't even know whether you need a sensible reason, because like the improv nature, the improvised nature of role playing games. If suddenly you decide this paladin who's been brave is a coward in this scene, then you can work on it later. And like,
sure, whatever he's fighting this week is something he's deeply terrified of.
Yeah, and you can ask the players, and like the players, oh, why did he run away? I don't know. Why do you think he ran away? And then just spiral off that. There's a Call of Cthulhu, Trail of Cthulhu pack called the Armitage Files, which consist of 10 letters written between from this character called Armitage to different people, and there's a mystery hidden in them, like there's a whole game. But the Armitage Files contains about 12 different stories, and whichever one your players focus on, that's the story. And rather than giving them a set adventure, you give them these really fluffy pieces of kit, and then when they say, "Oh, I think it's about his madness here in paragraph 3," then that changes the tone of the game. It's like, "Well, yeah, certainly," and you can roll with that and adapt the information. But yeah, talking to and listening to your players is a tremendously valuable skill, and I think that one that not enough DMs have to intuit or just flat out ask what players want, and then try and work that in a smooth way. Will pay dividends, but I try to look at it as a broad brush. So if I know this player has made a social character, and I know that they're super keen to do social things, then giving them one social thing a game means that they leave happy. And it doesn't always have to be a straightforward challenge. Like you give them someone gullible, and gullible NPCs are the best NPCs. Because you walk up as, oh, hello there, what's going on here? If they believe anything they say, they become a sponge for roleplay. And it's a really useful thing to do. But yeah, so I'm waffling, but yeah, listen to your players. We've all said pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, listen to them, work with them, take their ideas.
Yeah, hold them close, kiss them, tell them they're pretty.
Just kiss them hard. Work hard, play hard, that's what I say.
Kiss them like a man. Yeah, kiss your players like a man. Table talk, doctor.
Only if they tell you they want to get me.
Don't do that. Don't listen to Grant's advice.
So I think maybe for next time, I just thought of another topic, see what you guys think. But having the whole risk-reward thing, risk is kind of a tricky thing and something that should be handled properly, because oftentimes we think of death as being the sort of the major risk, that, you know, losing their lives. But it isn't always a big threat if the person can just tear it up and draw a new character up, you know, from scratch. So, so that's something maybe we'll talk about next time.
Okay. Yeah. No. I've
already got
good.
Some ideas. I like that.
Cool. Thanks, guys. So
thank
once
you very
again,
much, John. Do you want to do some kind of sign off?
Yeah, I was going to say I'm John Jones. I'm at John Solo on Twitter, and Will Blackstock is at Dark Wedge, and Grant is GS Howitt.
G Showitt. Also, I've just released a game. I released a game last week.
That's
called,
news.
Called Havoc Brigade. Which you were both in the very earliest playtest of, back when it was a game about orcs running through Dark Heresy.
Yes, that was great fun.
John played a character which was just 15 goblins in a stack, and they all had individual names. And when the character took a wound, he just crossed off one of the goblins.
That was
and
brilliant.
It was bang the goblin, proud gun owner. Yes, a very long time ago, hung over to High Heaven, I ran a game of that on a boiling hot day in London. And over the years, I've refined it, and I've changed it from using from the Dark Heresy system and being set in the Warhammer 40,000 universe to using my own system and being set in a generic fantasy universe. And you play by a squad of six orcs up to no good in a human city, going on adventures and only tangentially solving the mission in any real way. It is a mayhem simulator. And it's actually quite good. I've received a lot of good word from playtesters. So if you're interested in that, my Patreon, where you can download it from, is patreon.com/ GS Howitt, Howitt. And it's free to download. Take a look. And if you like saying stupid things, you'll love this game.
Definitely check it out. It was a blast. Yeah. We had a lot of fun with that game. It's truly inspired design. No, I mean it. So.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
So,
all right,
thanks,
boys. Call it a night, shall we?
Yep.
Good evening, good morning.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, good night.
Enjoy.
And goodbye.
I'm probably heading off to bed fairly soon, but enjoy tomorrow.
I'm going back to bed.
Wherever you are.
I'm going back to bed in the future.
Okay, great.
How is the weather in the future?
Good. Gorgeous. I'm in Sydney. We don't really get bad weather here. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, forecasts tomorrow in London are not... Not good.
I'm looking out over the Botanic Gardens and hearing cockatoos screech as I can see the peaks of the Opera House glinting through the early morning sunlight. It's
all right.
Cheers, everyone.
Good night.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.